This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
Isn't it convenient that we have a round table?
Well, it's actually oval. Just saying. Yeah.
The blind guy feels it now, goes, well, I guess it is oval.
Kind of oval.
I get to be the host here. Hey. Oh, hold on. I've been the host for the last 2 hours. All right. Never mind that. I won't get too so overjoyed. But I do get to host the roundtable, which is a segment we've been doing for a long time on the program since the very beginning. And we just get into some discussion points. We invite a couple of people in here and we chat. Jeff Ryman, our co-producer on the program, is joining us. I think it's the first time we've ever had you as a guest on the roundtable, isn't it?
I think maybe once 3 years ago.
Wow.
It's been a while.
I wonder if it was the same kind of scenario. I wonder if like one of us was away and something happened and we had to call in the replacements and bring you in. Wow.
Yeah, probably. I don't know why else I'd be on.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know either. Anyway, let's bring our guest in, our real guest in. Alex Smythe rejoining us too for the roundtable, TV reporter out of the Toronto area and just waiting and anxious to be able to say, but I'm right now a vacationing TV reporter. How long are you with us still before you go away?
Oh, geez. I still got a few weeks. I mean, the way I've done it this year is I take like Fridays off like in December, and then I got a few other days. Like I took American Thanksgiving off last week so I could, you know, be home and watch some football and not have to worry about work, stuff like that. So I'm taking like individual days, but I think I officially start on whatever the Friday of the 15th, the week of the 15th is. I don't even know the dates. Like that's how
17th,
how out of touch. Yes, the 17th. And that'd be my official kind of start of my Christmas break. And then I'm off until the 4th.
When I had your job, I would, because we'd get doing so much stuff, I'd be gone by sometime. I think the earliest I was gone by was December the 4th, somewhere in there. Generally, it was around the 10th or so, and I'd be gone until into January. And it was the weirdest thing just to be gone for that long. But because of doing, and you know, Alex, your commitments with TV, you get so busy, you don't get a chance to take the time off when you might want to. So you're ending up stockpiling or doing something smart like you were talking about and using up your Fridays.
Well, the thing is, I find, Kelly, and I don't know if you found it when you were doing it, it's like after a certain point of being off for so long, you kind of get a bit bored and you kind of want to get back to doing the thing. So it's like I found last year I had like 3 or 4 weeks off in a row. And it's like, yeah, by the end of that like second week going on to the third week, I could get back to work now, so I didn't want to like have too many weeks off. Plus, there's enough other things going around and enough to keep me busy. I don't want to kind of screw over future Alex when I come back and there's piles of work that I haven't done in a month.
Yeah, and January, as many people would think, well, it's kind of that slow time coming back after the holidays, doing the TV stuff. No, you can't. You got commitments. You got things to do. And the slow, maybe at Christmas, even at Christmas time, you're still planning on doing stuff for programming that's got to be on, hitting those Christmas festival type things. Anyway, guys, I'm going to start with our first item. We'll stick with a bit of TV discussion here. Alec Baldwin says he never pulled the trigger in his first sit-down interview since a cinematographer was killed on the New Mexico film set back in November. Take a listen.
It's a surprising revelation from Alec Baldwin sitting down with ABC's George Stephanopoulos.
It wasn't in the script for the trigger to be pulled.
Well, the trigger wasn't pulled. I didn't pull the trigger.
So you never pulled the trigger?
No. I would never point a gun at anyone and pull a trigger at them, never.
That and the first clip from ABC's upcoming primetime special Thursday night. Baldwin talked for 2 hours, clearly emotional, at times crying, apparently devastated over the death of cinematographer Helena Hutchins, killed by a bullet that came out of a gun in Baldwin's hand. We'll hear more of what he had to say Thursday night. Jason Athanson, ABC News, Hollywood.
And yes, actually, folks, sorry. It's October. Jesus, shows you how far along that I feel like I've gotten and not able to cover that in my mind. So I want to start with you, Alex. We see these things happening. We ask the questions, what are actual bullets doing on set, live bullets and things like that. But then you also start seeing something like that. And I don't know if you're going to watch tonight's interview stuff. I always get creeped out when I see these kinds of things. I know we want answers. We want to hear from the person who was there and so involved. But it feels funny when I hear a 2-hour interview over the topic, and this is where someone has lost their life.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's you almost get the sense that at a certain point the tragedy becomes secondary.
Yeah.
And it's just a mystery of what led to this situation to happen in the first place. And I, for myself, I'm at that stage now. It's just like, how does this happen now? Now, we just heard him, Alec Baldwin, say that he didn't pull the trigger. Okay, well, how does a gun go off without a trigger being pulled? And so then this is a whole load of questions. Now, is he being truthful in that? I don't know. And unless there is actual evidence from the set when the deadly incident took place that can prove one way or another that he did fire the shot, we may never know, truly. But the more I hear about this story and this situation, the more questions come up for me. Like, I read an article on CBC yesterday morning where there was talking about the father of the gunsmith for the Rust Project had worked with the ammo supplier in the past, and there were questions raised about that. And I think the FBI or some other agency is starting to look into the armor, the ammo supplier, because there's a whole ripple with that. But the more that gets uncovered and the more this story takes shape, the more questions you have. And it seems like at every single stage of this entire project, there were something happened that shouldn't have happened, or someone was doing something that they shouldn't have been doing. And it just ultimately led to this tragedy that seems like it could have easily been avoided.
Mm-hmm. It's a couple of months. Like, it feels like we should have more concrete answers, and yet we come up with a 2-hour TV interview that's allowed to be on TV during this what I believe is very much a still active investigation. And I understand when people say, well, why was there live ammo around? Well, maybe they use it to shoot up a bar or something like that, and it's in a controlled situation where no actors, very few people except the stunt people who are involved, but you're not having human beings. You're maybe it's just showing the outside, the exterior, and they use real weapons. I don't know if they do that stuff. I don't know enough about TV. Jeff, any impressions you've had over this?
Yeah, it's kind of shocking, and kind of like you, Kelly, and you know, obviously I watch TV, I watch movies, but I don't really know too much behind the scenes of what goes on in a shoot like this. And first thing that came to my mind was, well, obviously it's a horrible tragedy. You never want to hear about that in the news, but also that they're using these prop guns, and I'm going to use air quotations here in mm-hmm. prop guns with real ammo. And then now Baldwin is saying that he didn't even pull the trigger, which just sort of adds another layer of mystery on top of everything already. So I had no idea that when I assumed prop guns, I just assumed, like, I don't know if you guys ever played with cap guns as a kid where they literally yeah. shot nothing. Like, they were yeah. just like plastic lookalikes, right? I don't know why this was on the set. I know when the news broke originally, there were a lot of people saying that they felt unsafe in this environment and they weren't necessarily following the typical protocols that are being used in traditional movie shoots. It's shocking. It's sad, but there's so many questions that I feel yeah. like a lot of people need the answers to. Not good news. And obviously now hearing this, it just, like I said, adds another layer of everything on top of it.
Well, and I understand actors are used to situations where maybe some of these people have acted for years, used the actual as close to reality replica or the real thing. But we're in that phase period where now are we going to go to where it's computer generated, or are we going to just say, let's go back to using the fake ones? Even the ones that had the paper pop out of them could be dangerous yeah. and stuff like that, of course. So, Alex, anything from you before we move on to the next item?
No, I think you guys both covered it, and you raised the question again. It's like, why are we still using guns at this magnitude that there is a potential to be a projectile, that there has to be ammo in it? I mean, we're at the stage now with CGI and rubber guns are a practical solution to a lot of these problems, that they look just as good it should just be the standard, the norm going forward. We should never have to need like live or semi-live prop guns or real guns on set anymore.
No, you would think not. Even the motion of drawing, holding the weighted gun in the hand, and I know some people will say that, but there's nothing like that feel. And I understand a lot of these people have their own personal guns, but, you know, there is that. No, it's not safe, man. We all do stunts and stuff with our car in the right spot to take our, you know, the chances. People do that, but, you know, on the movie set, you're going to do all sorts of things in controlled circumstances, and most of these actors are, okay, get out of the car. We're going to pull it into a parking spot. That's too dangerous for you to be in the car. Guys, let's take a little look at one of the items I'm kind of curious about, Alex, especially if you guys actually consider this stuff to cover more so in documentaries. Researchers are finding that the planet's warming is taking a deadly toll on seabirds.
Climate-related losses have hit albatrosses off the Hawaiian Islands, northern gannets near the British Isles, and puffins off the Maine coast. As sea levels rise, some birds are less able to build nests. Others are starving, unable to find fish as the ocean heats up. Extreme weather is also taking a toll. Terns living off New England have died during increasingly frequent rain and hailstorms, while hurricanes wipe away nests, resulting in fewer chicks than years gone by. Researchers at the University of British Columbia estimate seabird populations have fallen 70% since the middle of the 20th century. I'm Ben Thomas.
So we took a week, Alex, on the program and really got into the environment in different ways, and really what we see as what we've all seen with the fires in the summer, the heat out west, and everything going on now with the rains. I'm curious, how much of this stuff over the last year or so has been inspiring you guys, and do you find yourself, as you research out stuff you want to talk about, pieces you want to do, is it having much more of an influence over the stuff that you plan in the new year to start producing and bringing to the table? How much is the environment and the dangerous things that are happening affecting the content you're planning?
You know, I think there's always been a level, especially in terms of my team here in Toronto, that we want to get into some of these topics. Like we've done for a number of years, like had in the back of our mind, we always have ideas floating around. Okay, oh, this would be really interesting to talk about, or we feel this is important. This doesn't get talked about enough, and even if it's not directly related to accessibility or the disability community, we can tell this really important, impactful story in an accessible way. And it extends even beyond just environmental issues and climate change to just celebrating nature. We did do one documentary, Forest Bathing, rooted in science, where, you know, we kind of explore the impact that trees and forests can have on our well-being, and we kind of explore that. And it was really an interesting experience for me to dive into that world of it, because I didn't really pay much attention to those types of theories and research before, because I always thought, oh, this is kind of, you know, a bit quasi-science. It was a bit of the homeopathic approach. Oh, being around nature is making you feel better. But then you started digging into the research and talking to the researchers who are actually doing the studies, gathering the information and showing there are actual provable improvements that take place. And then you start to get into the discussion that, okay, well, trees are really positive and having an impact on us, then we really need to focus on preserving them, protecting them, and celebrating them. And I think that for me, one area I always want to explore in a doc and with AMI is trying to do our own take on a nature documentary, on a animal conservancy lens of celebrating nature, celebrating animals and how amazing they are, and then telling that story in an accessible manner, and then also linking it to the need to preserve, protect, and ensure that we're limiting our impact on the natural world. And that comes in with climate change, that comes in with global warming, that comes in with how we interact with the natural world around us. So that's definitely been on my mind, and it's trying to figure out a way that we can tell that story the way we want to be able to do it.
We found that too, Jeff. I think you can concur with this with as we researched to do our Climate Action Week and the conversations we had coming out of that week, we had different viewpoints of at least a few things and quite happy with, hey, do the one thing or two things that you can do. And you're making an improvement if all of us could do that.
Kels, what's so interesting about this topic is, and I don't think we realized the magnitude of global warming and climate change until we started to really dig into things, and specifically from a producer's standpoint. There's a lot of different angles in which you can go with if you're going to make a documentary, or in our case, Kelly, we had a whole week dedicated to it, and we had a great deal of guests join us during that week. I think we had four, maybe five guests who were able to speak about the environment and climate change. I feel like we could have had a whole month. Like, there are that many issues going on right now. And Kelly, going back to this report that you just played, it's sad because every single week, every single day, there seems to be something new and similar to what we just heard come out. And something's got to change. And I think people are starting to take it more seriously. And hopefully going forward, people do start to take it more seriously.
Well, and I think one of the things, guys, and by the way, if you want to check out Alex's work, folks, you can check it out on the AMI app available through Android or iOS. We talk about what we're going through with the pandemic, but we have to always remember there are pandemics. There are things happening in sea life, in insect life, always something happening around us, some illness, something that it wipes out species sometimes completely, and we lose so many species, you know, every day pretty well. So I find that when you think about things in that context and think about how the world's affecting us, we think about every move we make doing that, what is it doing to all these other creatures? Alex, I wanted to get into some hockey and baseball with you guys, but we've run out of time. So I know, oh boy, did you hear that collective cheer from Matt Agnew and Ramya Muthan? Wow. Anyway, thanks a lot, pal. The best of the holidays to you.
Yeah, thank you too. And as always, I enjoy coming on, chatting with you. And in this case, Jeff, Jeff, you weren't just a fill-in. You were the all-star of this roundtable, I will say.
Not a chance, but I appreciate the kind words.
And I appreciate you too, Jeff, you sitting in there today as we lost Brock. But we'll be back in a moment, folks, to wrap up the show. It's Kelly and Company on your Thursday. You've been listening to Kelly and Company. If you're hooked, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. And be sure to leave us a rating and review. Or you can listen live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.